you really want to be the best version of yourself, which is ultimately the only person that you can be if you want to succeed in a significant way, you need to do things in the beginning of your day that are going to build confidence to project courage so that you can go out there and do shit. And the best way for me is I really did learn that everybody has the opportunity to build an unbelievable, successful, happy life. It's how willing are you to pull out the shovel and dig? What are you willing to do? I definitely was a person that just did not do what I said I was going to do. I began to believe that I was a loser, that I was a failure, and I would still overcompensate and say I was going to do all sorts of shit, and I would not do it. And I'm here to tell you that, like, I'm a living, breathing example of someone who has overcome that, and now whatever passes my lips, I do.
Until you learn how to put yourself first, it can feel a bit awkward. But then once you learn how, you can see that it's actually the most effective way to light up your day and to level up the people around you. And that is a lesson that this particular individual holds dear, and I have actually learned from him. Whether a creator, an entrepreneur, a high performer, running marathons, bodybuilding competitions, you name it, likely he's done it. Founder of Seymour's and a few other different type of ventures here in New York City, I am so amped to welcome the founder of his latest venture, Creatures of Habit, Mr. Michael Cherna. How are you today, sir?
Thanks so much for having me, dude. Thanks so much for having me. Stoked to be here. We've been talking about this for a minute.
Well, honestly, we're actually doing it. It's one of those, like, kind of surreal moments where, you know, you plan for something for a while, you learn, you know, kind of from afar in this day and age from someone's content. So the opportunity to actually sit down, learn firsthand. I was talking recently and I left out that you're also a podcaster, and I'm actually kind of curious your thought on this. I feel like one of the advantages of being a podcaster is time, because eventually the content gets released out into the world. So everyone gets access to the same information, right? But the only kind of lever that you can pull in that is you get to review it, audit it, and, like, see what actually happened in that conversation, because I feel like when you listen back is when all the actual learning happens. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious what your take is on.
Yeah, no, that's 100%. Like, I look forward to Wednesday mornings when the Creatures of Habit podcast drops. It's the first thing I listen to on Wednesday mornings, and it's my opportunity. You know, I bring guests on my show because I'm really interested in their lives, and they've impacted me in some way, right? And so when you're in the podcast and you're engaged and you're just like, I always do my podcast in person because I really like to get that, like, energy from the person. It's harder to do it virtually. Not that it's not great virtually, but it's much harder to get the energy, which is something that I really thrive on. So I love being able to, like, re-listen to the podcast from, like, a spectator standpoint and be like, wow, like, I was so engaged in that moment that I wasn't really able to fully appreciate what that person said, you know? So I love. I mean, it's like I'm like creating content for me to learn from, you know?
Yeah, it's like an MBA almost, you know? You get the opportunity, especially in your case, right? Like, the type of network that you've developed, the guests that you've had on, the access to people, and just compounding that over time and years and years. You've had two different podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, when it comes to The Born or Made, which was the previous rendition of Creatures of Habit, and forgive me if I'm, you know.
No, it's right. That's right.
Did you find that you answered that question?
Yes, I did. And the answer, unfortunately, is 50-50. my sort of interpretation of, there were some people that were so confident that they were born with their inherent talent to do what they do. And then there were other people that were so confident, equally as successful in their specific arena, but so confident that they were built over time. So in my mind, you know, everybody is born with something. And the way we get to that thing is by pulling out the shovel and digging. And I think the sad part about humans is that not everybody wants to dig. So the beauty of that podcast, which I shot for, I think, a couple years, you know, I had a bunch of great guests on that show. I really did learn that everybody has the opportunity to build an unbelievable, successful, happy life. It's how willing are you to pull out the shovel and dig? What are you willing to do? Everybody can do it. Everyone can do it. Everybody has the ability. Everybody can dig, you know? But like, how willing are you to do that is the thing that separates the good from the great.
On that note, good from great, digging, I mentioned at the top, you've kind of gone through a few different ventures, entrepreneur, creator, competitor. Why do you keep going through all these different renditions of competition? I guess the question is really, at one point it's bodybuilding. At one point it's multiple marathons. At one point it's multiple restaurants. What is it that makes you tick?
I love life, dude. I love life. I genuinely love living. And there was a period in my life for about 11 years where I genuinely did not like living. I was deep in the throes of addiction, and it's a blur. Today, I love living. I love living life to its fullest. I love living every ounce of life I can. I am fired up every single morning to lift up rocks and see what's underneath there. And, you know, if it's a rattlesnake, I learn how to navigate that. That, for me, is just, I am a hunter at heart. And I think I've always been a hunter at heart, and I got sidetracked for a decade. But, you know, who knows if we get another shot at this thing. For me, I just want to feel alive. And so I take risks and I do things that I really want to do. And I do what I say I'm going to do. You know, I have a sort of a philosophy, an internal philosophy that does not shut down my ideas. I can have as many ideas as I want, man, as many ideas as I want, and I can write them down and I can think about them and I can build, you know, mood boards around them. But the minute I say I'm going to do it, whether out loud by myself or to someone else, it comes out of my mouth. I'm going to do it. And I might fail and I might not be good, but if I say I'm going to do it, I'm going to fucking do it. And that's how I've sort of done the shit that I've done in my life, because I really do believe that our word is kind of everything. And what we say, if we don't fulfill, we begin to lose trust within ourselves. The worst person you cannot have trust in is yourself. If you lose trust in someone else, you can eliminate that person from your life. You don't have to deal with them anymore. Or you can, you know, figure out a way to potentially build that trust back up. But once you consistently fail yourself by saying you're going to do things and not doing them, you lose trust in yourself. And losing trust in yourself is hard to come back from. It's not impossible, because I definitely did that. I definitely was a person that just did not do what I said I was going to do consistently over and over and over again. I began to believe that I was a loser. I began to believe that I was a failure. I began to believe I wasn't able to do anything. And I would still overcompensate and say I was going to do all sorts of shit, and I would not do it. And I'm here to tell you that, like, I'm a living, breathing example of someone who has overcome that. And now whatever passes my lips, I do.
When you look back on that time where you were able to crawl back and now obviously evolve into who you become, do you find that it's, and pardon me for asking the question if there's any boundaries that I'm
no boundaries. Crossing.
Do you find that it's more running from pain or closer to desire?
When I was living in those days?
Yeah.
I think it was, without a question of a doubt, hiding from feeling. I was an escape artist from as early as I can remember, you know? I mean, interestingly enough, like now, like I run as fast as I can towards fear, you know? But then from the childhood that I had, you know, I had a pretty rough childhood. I was just scared. I was scared, and so I wanted to feel safe. And at first, it was sleeping over at friends' houses. And then once I got old enough, you know, 11, 12 years old, it was smoking cigarettes. And that made me feel different. That made me feel like I was like older and had a little bit more control. And then 12, 13, it became, you know, doing drugs. And then I did that for years. And once I got into drugs, 13, 14, real drugs, I had complete control over my feelings. And honestly, I think at that point, it saved my life because I was like really miserable. I like really didn't like my life. You know, it was like hard living in my parents' house. And so I really do believe that the drugs were definitely running away from the pain for sure. But who knows, you know, I know a lot of people that have used drugs and abused drugs and become addicted to drugs and drinking that had an amazing childhood, that had an amazing, loving family, you know. But in my case, I had a very loving mother and a very abusive father. And my father never made me feel like I was worth anything, you know. Never showed me attention, never gave me attention. The only attention he gave me was like aggressive and anger. And so, you know, I just didn't have this feeling of confidence, you know, for a long time. And then the drugs and the alcohol gave me the confidence that I was looking for. And so I stuck with that, right? Like, you find something that works. I mean, it really did work for a number of years, probably 13, 14 to 17, 18. And then it just got ugly. You know, it was dark. It was like the places that I would come to and were like, whoa, what have you done? Like, look around you, man. Like, this is where you're at, you know? And that was rough for me. But I didn't know how to stop. And then finally, you know, I got lucky, man. I got lucky. I had a little moment of grace, you know? The window opened just ever so slightly this one day. And I knew that I was dying. I'd already overdosed. It was coming to the end. I was like at the end. And I stuck my hand to the window and asked for help. And I got, someone grabbed it, you know, and pulled me through the window. And thank God, you know, that my life has never been the same since that day.
And a lot of the philanthropic that you do these days has to do with helping people who are suffering from those same issues. Most recently, you just had the Go Ruck event, and you were able to raise tens of thousands of dollars, if I'm not mistaken.
75 grand, yeah.
How does that make you feel?
You know, obviously, I'm incredibly passionate about helping people come through and seeing that there's a solution to addiction. The hardest part of it, though, is that unless people are willing and ready to change, no amount of money, no human being, no pot of gold, nothing is gonna pull them through the window like I got pulled through. You know, I had to throw my hand through that window and like close my eyes and hope someone grabbed me because I was ready at that very second. And I did, and I got pulled through. But I've lost 10, 15 friends from childhood to overdose. One of my best friends has been living on the street for 4 years in complete cocaine psychosis, crack cocaine psychosis. One of the greatest human beings I know. Just smart, insanely talented, like beyond talented, comes from a great family. I could walk there with $1 million and I could say, dude, I'm going to spend $1 million on your recovery. You will never have to worry about drinking again because you're going to be in the greatest place. Be there for as long as you want. He's living in a tent on Skid Row. He right now, if I had that and I walked over and told him that, he'd look at me and say, get the fuck out of here, dude. I'm not going with you. I don't fucking care what you got. I'm not ready. This is what I like doing this, you know. So am I grateful that we raised the money and we're helping people? Absolutely. Is it hard for me to know that the only people I can help are the ones that are just right in that moment ready? Yeah. That's a hard nut to swallow because there's millions of people that are struggling with addiction. Millions. And a very small percentage of them can see the light at the end, you know. So what I'm more excited about is sharing my story of someone who was deeply addicted you know, no one would leave a $5 bill in front of me, thinking that if they walked away to the bathroom, that $5 bill would still be there. No one. It, like, wouldn't even be a question. They'd be like, this guy's untrustworthy. He is going to punch me in the face or hit on my girlfriend, you know. And I can't even believe that that kind of is like, you know, I was that person. But, you know, I guess being on your podcast, being on people's podcasts, sharing my story, being able to say, hey, like, I promise you with all my heart, with every cell in my body, there is a solution for this. And the other side is so much better. Just so much better, you know. Addicts are the most loyal. They just are. Think about it. They'll do anything. They'll do anything for the high. They are so loyal. They are so resourceful. None of them work, for the most part. Deep addiction. None of them work. They're living in the street. But they're getting high all day long. They're figuring out how to do it. You remove the drug, that loyalty and that conviction and that resourcefulness is still there in that person. You reapply it to positive shit. Some of the most successful people in the world are you know, recovering addicts.
You know, when I asked the question, I was thinking about the impact that you've made through your philanthropy. And there's a great saying, you know, at the end of the day, they may not remember my name, but maybe someone will feel my impact. And I spent a few years as a criminal prosecutor in the Bronx, special victims, and you deal a lot with victims who suffer from domestic violence. And they won't turn on their accusers. So the dismissal rate is like through the roof. And it's the craziest thing. It's the Bronx, so the volume's like sky high. And someone equated it to trying to drain the ocean with a spoon. Like, you can't save everybody. But even if no one remembers the name, maybe they can feel the impact. And that principle has really helped me make sense of a lot of things, and understanding what I believe and what I can prove are two different things. And when I listen to you speak now, knowing the story, but then hearing it from you, like, face to face, two different experiences, like, completely. You could hear the information at two different points in time, but obviously, you know, present moment or otherwise, like, the real impact in seeing how genuine you are about this. And also, at the same time, you're a walking example of not being a prisoner to your past and understanding, like, it's all about the forward momentum and progress and impact that you can make. And so, getting back to the impact that you continue to make, multiple ventures, creator, you've created this whole universe of different things that from scratch, you know, you can call your own. Let's say someone's kind of looking to do the same thing, where they want to be this creator entrepreneur, doesn't want to be a prisoner to their past. How can they start to take steps from square one to Michael Chernow status?
I mean, first of all, thank you. I appreciate that. It you know, hearing it from you, it you know, it's almost, it's like alarming to me to hear that, right? Like, it's like, because I have come from a pretty, you know, difficult place. But to answer your question, and this might sound weird, but it's my story. You got to go to bed early. You got to wake up early. And you got to start your day every single day with absolute conviction on self-care and self-love through fitness, nutrition, and mindset. Period. That's it. Don't worry about school. Don't worry about the job. Don't worry about the other people. If you really want to be the best version of yourself, which is ultimately the only person that you can be if you want to succeed in a significant way, you need to do things in the beginning of your day that are going to build confidence, enough confidence to project courage so that you can go out there and do shit. And the best way for me is every single day to start my day putting the right foot forward in self-care, self-love. It's just that simple. And the only way to do that is because my life is full, because I'm a husband, because I'm a father of two boys, because I have businesses, because I do the creator stuff, my day is full from 7 o'clock in the morning till 9 o'clock at night when I go to bed, full packed. I have no control in that day for the most part. Once somebody else walks into your periphery, you completely lose control. That person can punch you. That person can kill you. That person can need your attention. That person can, you know, my kid walks right past this line of sight. Boom. It's his time now. He has more control than I do. And so for me, I found that this 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. period of time is where I win, is where I set myself up for success. This might not be for everyone. I get people to say, I don't need to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning to be successful. I'm like, great. I'm telling you my story. Once I started taking the morning and creating a routine that really focused on me, 100%, full me, before my kids, before my wife, before my business, before everything, me. I am the top of my totem pole. I am the top. I am my priority. Because I know that when I am the priority, everyone else benefits. Everyone. When I'm not the priority, all I'm thinking about is myself. All motherfucking day. Right? Like, I'm not good enough. I'm not smart enough. I'm not cool enough. I'm not talented enough. I'm not this. I'm not that. Why? Because I didn't put the energy into giving myself the confidence, the wins in the beginning of the day to say, dude, you got it, bro. You go out there and crush. You got this. You got this. Don't fucking, no, you got this, man. You just did all these things in the morning to just build up this, like, this humble confidence that now I can go be the best dad. I can go be the best husband. I can go be the best business person. I can go be the best son. You know, son, I probably should be a better son. But without that time in the morning, I'm not showing up my best self, you know? And that's my advice. So short answer, go to bed early. Start there, you know? Start there. If you're staying up until 12, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning for no fucking reason, you're scrolling on your phone, you're on the computer, you're watching Netflix, like, that's the first step as far as I'm concerned. Get to bed early so that you can get up early before everybody else and build the confidence that you need to go out and take risks and have courage and crush. Because without confidence, you do not have courage. It's just that simple. Consistency, confidence, courage. Consistency, confidence, courage. The mantra for me. If I do this consistently, I will get better at it. When I get better at things, I'm more confident. I'm more confident. I'm more confident. I'm more confident. Now I can take the risk. Kind of the formula.
I've been using Creatures of Habit as my first meal of the day for a while now. A nutrient-dense, performance-driven, optimized oatmeal that helped fuel my last marathon, but also my post-recovery meal for each of my runs. I'm getting all the nutrients I need without having to think much about it. Overnight, boiled hot water, or make it on the stove. There are so many flavors to choose from, and for my listeners, you can get 15% off your first purchase or subscription with code InsideTheInspired. Check out creaturesofhabit.com to get your first time discount today.
When I learned the lesson from your content about I understood the value behind waking up early and working out in the morning. But the trickle down effect of it and showing up for my best self so that everyone else can benefit, everyone else around me wins when I put me first, that is absolutely a lesson I can attribute to your content. So I'm looking you in the eye and I'm saying that, like, with full confidence. That
thanks, man.
I was doing it anyway, but understanding the rationale behind it, it's like, oh, now I'm working with something different. Now it's like I'm purpose-driven. And this morning I went running and kissing my wife and baby, 6:30 in the morning, I'm already out on the road, had a nice 10-mile run, and I'm thinking to myself as I'm running, it's easier to stay in bed, right? It's easier to be cozy. And like, I could spend the time. And this is like what my friends reach out to me about, just easier to stay with my girl, you know, with my dog or my baby, like whatever it is. And I was thinking, I think I am a better person, obviously, because I do these things. But I think that the moments that matter to me the most, the ones that I remember, aren't the ones that I stayed in bed. They're the moments that I woke up and kissed my wife and my baby before I went out and did the thing. And that is the moment that I appreciate and remember. The moment that the hard thing, building the willpower, is actually doing the thing you don't want to do, even if at your core you want to work out and look good, right? Like getting up and doing the thing, and that moment I get to kiss my wife and baby, that one stays with me. That's the thing that just like fills my cup. And mentioned you're a father. What does it mean to you to be a dad?
It's the thing I'm most proud of in my life. Hands down, nothing can touch that. Not even come close. It is the thing I'm most proud of in my life. And I was not given a good blueprint. I was scared to have children. I always wanted to have kids, but I was really scared because I thought that there was a chance that I would continue the chain from my father and my grandfather and my father, because I know my father didn't have it easy with his father. So there was a piece of me that was just like, God, man, what if there's like some overpowering emotion that I can't control and I'm just angry and not nice to the kids, or, you know, something just I can't control. Like, what if that's the case, you know? And it just couldn't be more the opposite. I am so madly in love with my boys. Like, I am so madly in love with them. And I'll tell a little story. So I was doing this, I've been doing this breathwork stuff. Mm-hmm. And the breath work is very intense, super intense. And it's not like some dilly-dally, you know, breath work. It's like hardcore 25, 30 minutes of consistent deep breathing, you know, all mouth breathing, really intense. And it's just unearthed some serious stuff for me. You know, like I think I can't tell you the exact science behind it, but I would imagine something with the sheer amount of oxygen that I'm putting into my body, it's activating potentially more of the brain than I'm used to utilizing, and it's just getting into those nooks and crannies and like unearthing some old stuff. But anyway, in one of the breathwork sessions, I saw myself as a 6-year-old kid, terrified, just terrified, and the image that I saw was me as a 6-year-old kid or 5-year-old kid standing with my elbows squeezed up to my ears, like totally stuck, scared, like eyes wide open, like I couldn't talk. I was hysterically crying when this happened in this breathwork session, because I'm like, oh my God, that's me. That's what it was. That is like that guy is me living inside of me in my mind, and that kid needs help, you know. And I couldn't help him right then and there, and I was like, man. And so when I was, you know, finished with the breath work, it was really intense for me. I'd never really seen that side of me. I never really thought about how I felt at those in those years. And so the facilitator that was working with me on the breath work said, you know, that's your inner child. And you need to heal that kid. You need to start doing things that kid would have wanted done for him then, now. And I was like, you know, I've got kids that kid's age. And those kids do not look like that. But I'm going to do for those kids what I wish my father would have done for me at that age. And the way I'm going to do that is I'm going to start allocating time to be alone with each one of them, one-on-one, bonding, which I didn't do enough of, because we always do shit as a family. Every morning we have breakfast together. Every night we have dinner together. And every weekend we all do shit together. And I love that. I love that we're a unit and we have so much fun together. But I also, having seen that kid, probably wish I would have had a relation. You know, I never did anything with my father ever. He never took me on a trip. He never took me out for anything, you know. And so I said, how I'm going to begin the process of healing that kid to potentially free up some brain space for me is I'm going to start spending alone time with those kids so that we develop a relationship, a bond together. And, you know, I believe in God. And so I started talking to God about that. And I didn't ask for anything specific outside of, I just want to be able to, you know, please help put in my path something for me to understand how to spend more time alone with the kids, you know. And then we all started skiing together, the whole family. We go on a Saturday, we go skiing in the afternoon, the mountains open a little bit later. So my younger son, 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, was cold. He didn't want to stay at the mountain. So Donna said, oh, I'm going to take Dakota home. You know, Finn was like, yes, I want to be ski. I didn't plan it, but Finn and I spent 6 hours together alone, skied. The next day, we all went to the mountain as a family. Dakota got tired. He's only six. He wanted to go home. Finn and I spent the rest of the day. Last weekend, we all went to the mountain on Saturday. Finn and I spent the whole evening together alone, two of us bonding. And some of the greatest moments of my life. So how do I feel about being a father? It's the best thing that ever happened to me, straight up.
Be the change you want to see in the world, right? And it's so cool to hear because I'm a new dad. She's almost 6 months. And it's like...
Congrats.
Thank you. It's the coolest thing ever. And to hear you talk about being a dad, six, seven... How old? Six and...
Dakota's six, Finley's eight.
8 years worth of experience being a dad, just to like kind of have that insight into the vision and that foresight. I mean, kind of shifting gears a bit, speaking of foresight, you know, you're someone who spotted a few different trends, created trends, and I'm sure the audience would be curious. When you're looking at a trend or have any type of vision or foresight, I think the word framework is kind of overused, but are there some factors or variables that you consider when making any type of investment, or, you know, whether that be as a creator and how you create your content, or as a businessman and how you go about establishing your ventures? Are there variables or factors that you consider in terms of how you build your business?
I mean, the truth is that I am a gut guy. I've always been a gut guy. And I hope to always be a gut guy, because being a gut guy has allowed me to make relatively expeditious decisions. Not all of them have been right, but more have been right than wrong. And that goes from hiring people, starting a business, creating a piece of content, making a decision to exit a business. So I really do believe in my gut, and some people will poo-poo that. You got to do the diligence. And I, of course, if I'm going to do something big, I mean, I do the diligence, you know, I got friends that can help me with diligence. I'm not great at diligence, but I really do. So I have a creative process. My creative process is pretty simple. When I'm thinking about doing something where I really do, and typically it comes from an itch that I'm trying to scratch myself, or something I'm just really passionate about and I want to make my own, I go on runs without a phone, no headphones, but I take a pad and paper and I go on a long, intentional run. The run is typically somewhere between 4 and 7 miles. And I'll say, hey, man, you're going to dig on this run. This run is about picking up dirt and sifting it and seeing if we can figure anything out. And that's how I created the meatball shop. That's how I created Seymour's. And that's definitely how I created Creatures of Habit, on long runs. And so I'll go on these runs. I'll walk in with an intention of trying to, you know, whether it's just coming up with an idea, or once the idea is there, I'm going to start thinking about a name. Let's start thinking about brand. Let's start thinking about people who I want to bring into the thing. And I'm stopping and I'm writing this shit down as I'm going. Stopping, writing it down. Once I feel like I've got something where there's potentially a name, or maybe not a name, but a direction towards a name, definitely a concept of some sort, I could feel what the brand kind of feels like, I then take it to Pinterest, and I sit down and I start creating on Pinterest, and I'll type in a color, I'll type in a car, I'll type in a person, I'll type in, and I'll start like trying to figure out what this brand is, right? Colors, feelings, textures, vehicles, buildings, architecture, places, people, music, sounds, all the different things that would define a culture, right? Because at the end of the day, strong business has culture. I believe business without culture is dead, right? So like for me, I'm thinking about, okay, you know, what defines culture? Defines a group of people typically, but music, sound, environment, food, communication, grieving, winning. How do these people do these things? And that's how I start to develop a business. That's how I just start to develop the culture of a business, feeling of a business. And I do it on Pinterest. So I get like a big board going. I got a big board. It's all kind of all over the place. But like over time, I keep adding to it. I keep adding to it. And you'll kind of just start to see over, you know, the course of a few months, just things start to like align, you know. And then once I get there, then if I don't have a name already, like I'll try to figure out a name. And if I feel really good about it, I start to tell people. Because I've built so many Pinterest boards. I got hundreds of Pinterest boards that I've never mentioned to a person ever. But there's been like five that I've started making phone calls on. And when I say it, I'm trying to find people to help me pull this thing together. Is this person going to work with me? Maybe, maybe not. But is this person going to help me try to find the right person to work with me? And so I start, you know, bringing people into it. And I got a guy that I call that can help me start to create a, you know, I start writing an executive summary. You know, back in the day when I first started doing business, you know, there was like, it wasn't about decks necessarily, it was business plans. You have to have a business plan. And the business plan, the first thing you see on a business plan is an executive summary. It's one page, 3 to 5 max paragraphs that describe exactly what you're doing. That page is your buy-in. That page is what an investor looks at, reads the first paragraph. If it's sticky, they'll read the second. If it's sticky, they'll read the whole thing. If they read the whole thing, they'll flip to the back of the business plan and they'll look at your financials. If the financials make sense, then and only then, and maybe not, do they start reading the meat of the business plan, the meat of the deck today, you know, as pitch deck. But for me, it was, you know, that process of getting out into the world, moving my body, creative flow, writing shit down, bringing it to Pinterest, creating the culture, the feeling, the sense, the, you know, of the business, starting, watching it align color-wise, feeling-wise, you know, and then, you know, bringing people in and creating this executive summary that I can ultimately pass to someone and say, hey, what do you think of this? You know, and that's where it starts.
I love the 360 approach, very holistic. From when you started talking about like grieving and winning and sound and how you articulated culture, that gives me something to think about as I build out this project and this business and see things grow. It's that depth of thought, the density behind it, the substance.
You know, like when you know, at the end of the day, right? Like great businesses tell stories. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Like you want to evoke a feeling in someone, ideally a good one, when they interact with your business, whether it's a product, whether it's an experience, whether it's a restaurant, whether it's a service. You want you want, most great businesses tell stories, so you definitely want to have a story. But ideally, after that first interaction with the business, the person that you're dealing with, or the person that is either a customer or a guest or whatever you want to call them, is walking away understanding, if not the whole story, a good percentage of that story. And the way you do that is culture. It's the way you do it, right? People go to Italy, they want to eat there. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like when you travel to Italy, like, yeah, you want to go see the Palladium, and yeah, you want to go check out Rome and Naples and, you know, and Capri. But really, when you say Italy, people think food. They've done that well, you know, food, right? You say France, people think cheese and wine. Like, they've done that, like that, you know. So what's the story your business is telling after that first interaction? You know, people come back from Italy, all they talk about is the food they ate. People come back from France, all they talk about is the cheese and the wine. People come back from Africa, typically they're like, we went to safari. We took a trip to Africa. We wanted to see what goes down there, you know? People, you know, like, it goes on and on and on, right? It's that is how I view business, right? And I've said it before. I remember sitting down with a guy named Mickey Drexler, who was the first CEO of Gap, ended up becoming the CEO of J. Crew. Then he went, I think he went, I don't remember where he went after that, American Apparel, legend in the apparel business, legend. One of the fucking coolest guys I've ever met in my life. And I had the pleasure of hanging out with him a number of times. And we were sitting down at Seymour's, you know, not long after I opened up Seymour's. And I looked at him and, you know, and he was like, so like, why is this, like, what is, like, you know, this is such a cool place. And I was like, man, because I put a lot of thought into the culture before I build it. And I was like, you know, business without culture is dead. And he was like, what? And I was like, business without culture is dead. And he was like, that might be the most fucking powerful thing anyone's ever said to me. And I was like, damn, coming from that guy, you know? But like, that's the truth, right? Like, in my opinion, you know, H&R Block is not a business that people are excited to interact with. I'm sorry, H&R Block, but like, you know, you know, like, businesses should tell stories to be super successful and have long-term connection, you know.
It's funny you talk about culture, because I sat down with, you know, Mark Megna.
Uh-huh.
Sat down with Mark Megna, asked him about culture, the culture at Anatomy that he's built, Gunnar Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
Sat down with him and had the opportunity to ask him about culture. What's the difference between the high performers that you work with and the general population? You know, willing to show up, self-sufficiency, reliability, take after themselves. Sat down with Mike Guevara, also world-renowned trainer who works with Olympians, number one tennis players, NBA athletes. And he also talked about culture, and I've never heard it. All due respect to every single one of those individuals who are top tier in their respective industries. I've never heard someone define culture in the way that you talked about it. And obviously, I have a couple more questions for you, but obviously, there's a lot of winning that's happened naturally. Behind all the winning, there's also a bunch of failure, rejection along the way. I'm sure it'd be very valuable for the audience to understand, how do you process failure, fear, and rejection?
I've had a lot of failure, specifically in partnerships. I've learned a lot about myself over the years as an entrepreneur, and I have found out and learned that I need to be in charge. It's just that simple. I have a lot of love and care and empathy, passion, and patience. But I am typically the visionary human. Let me not say typically. I am always the visionary human at the business, for sure, in the businesses that I've created. And I think that is, it's arguably the most important peace, right? Like, you know, you go out on a trek. You know where you park your car in the lot. You know where you're starting. And like, you know where you're going. You know where you got to end up, right? How you get there is fucking, you know, it could be raining. There could be mudslides. Like, the trail could be closed. You got to take a roundabout route. You got, you know, like, you roll your ankle, you whatever, right? Like, how you get there is like TBD always. But where you're going is really important. It's not about the destination, but you need a target, in my opinion. You need a target, right? And I've always been able to see the target from before we even hit the trail. Always able to see the target. And I feel like if the target continues to move, it's hard, much harder. The journey, always gonna move. It is like herding cats, you know? Like, I've never, ever been able to say, okay, this is where we're starting, this is where we're going, and this is exactly how we're gonna get there, right? Like, I like to have a plan, but I'm never like emotionally attached to the plan. However, I do believe that a clear vision of where you are trying to go is fucking necessary. And anybody who wants to threaten that with me at the helm of a business, the where we're trying to go, I don't play well. I just don't, you know? And so I'm the nicest, I really do. Like, I really do lead with my heart. I am not an asshole. It's hard for me to be an asshole. But if you threaten the vision of the business for me is when I can be difficult. And so now I know that. It's happened to me twice. I will never put myself in a situation where I have to feel the pain of having to deal with breaking up with a business partner. It's so, so painful. It's so hard. Like, Meatball Shop, man. And even to an extent, Seymour's, but Meatball Shop, man. So hard, man. It was just, the business is like so good. The business was so good. But my partner and I, dude, I love him to death. He's still my best friend. We had to take a couple years off of communicating after we decided to part ways in Meatball Shop. But man, going through that was just, goddamn, it just killed me. It ripped my guts out. Like, ripped my, I lost millions of dollars, you know, just crazy. And so that was a big, invaluable, definitely don't regret it. So grateful for it. Invaluable experience that fucking kicked me in the teeth over and over again. That was like failure hard, you know? And I have no one to blame but me. I take full accountability. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that it wasn't a two-way street, because it absolutely was, but I had to learn the hard way, man. You know, I put myself in a bad position with the business. I wasn't a businessman then. I was a kid. I was 28. It was like getting into something for the first time. You know, I put myself in a corner, and it was really, really tough. But, you know, now I can sit here and say, you know, would it have been awesome to have, you know, the millions of bucks in the bank? Yeah, it would have been. But woulda, coulda, shoulda. I'm so grateful for the experience, you know? And then again, I had to do it again to really understand how painful it is to work with somebody that's not easy to work with for me. And now I just know I'll never, ever do it again. I need to be the boss. And I'm not the dick. There's a big difference, you know? But I do need to be the final say. I do need to be the one that's like, I hear ya. I hear you. We're going to do it this way, you know? And 9 out of 10 times, I don't use that power card. I don't pull it. I tell everybody who I hire, you know, hey, I'm hiring you because I think you're fucking smarter than me. You know what I mean? Like, I want you to make decisions. I don't want to be a bottleneck in your decision-making process. So do me a favor. You're here for a reason. I hired you because I think you're awesome. I want to learn from you. I think you're smarter than me in this specific area. And I want you to make decisions and ask for forgiveness if you fuck up. But I do not want you to knock on my door all day long asking for permission. Because that would, in my opinion, I just don't need to operate that way. I'm not a micromanager. I'm a terrible micromanager. I'm not the guy, right? So you're here for a reason. If I felt like I needed to hold your hand, I wouldn't have hired you. Go fucking do your thing. Win as often as you can. And when you fail, we'll fix it together. And that's how I've, you know, the last, you know, 3-4 years, that's how it's gone. And I'm fired up about it.
I've had an awesome time here today. I have one final question for you before we wrap up. This is a question that I pose to all my guests that I'll now pose to you. If the future version of yourself from 10 years from now, assuming he's in that ideal spot, were to fly in and offer you some advice in order to get there, what do you think he would say to you?
Keep doing what you're doing, which is be humble, have patience, know that things take time, and make sure that your family gets more time than you think, you know. I think that would probably be the piece of advice that I would give myself. Keep doing what you're doing. Make sure you give your family more time than you think they need.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Michael Chernow, please let the audience know where they can keep up with your journey.
You can follow me anywhere on any social platform at Michael Chernow. And yeah, Creatures of Habit, Creatures with a K. creaturesofhabit.com. Check out the business that I'm rocking out right now. It's also at Creatures of Habit everywhere. Creatures of Habit podcast, KOH pod on all podcast platforms. MichaelChernow.com is my website. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Inside the Inspired. I've had an awesome time here today with Mr. Michael Chernow, who just keeps finding ways to get after it. If you found some value out of this, please share with a friend, share it on all your channels, or connect with Michael so this way you can keep up with his journey. Once again, my name is Jonathan Cohen, and this is Inside the Inspired.